Welcome back to Mental Health Integration. In this section, we are going to be going through all of these mental illnesses and what they look like and definitions. It's going to be quite a knowledge dump, which I'm excited about because you just need to know these things. You need to know what's around. And so when you hear something like, I have BPD or I have this other issue, you know what it is. You at least have a place to put it in your mind. So with that said, we are going to jump right in to different mental illnesses. The DSM-5 starts with neurodevelopmental disorders. These are a different type of disorder. They affect about 8.8% of the population, but ironically enough, they affect more males than females. Among those are autism spectrum disorders, which make up 1.8%, as you see, ADHD, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which makes up 8.8%, communication disorders, specific learning disorders, motor disorders, intellectual disabilities. These are all issues of how your neurology comes to be. So, when we're talking about these, we will start with autism spectrum disorders. Now, autism affects how your brain forms, in autism specifically. There's a huge range of what autism can look like. It ranges from very, very, very mild autism all the way to extreme autism, where people can be non-functional. But what autism does is it creates your neural networks differently. So your brain naturally wires itself, and it naturally forms all of these connections between your different neurons. And in autism, some areas of your brain will form extra connections, while others just won't form the connections they're supposed to. And because of that, it greatly affects how people process. So you see people have different issues about maybe not understanding the person in front of them, or not understanding cues, or not understanding how things naturally work as far as expectations of interactions. It changes how people work within systems of people. It changes what is most important to them. Some really famous people with autism spectrum disorders have really begin to say autism is actually a really good thing, because people with autism tend to be focused on, especially with, you know, what used to be called Asperger's and now is a less severe form of autism spectrum disorder. These are people who create and generate and build things, and while everyone else is around sitting around a campfire, someone with autism may have invented the first spear because they were focused on building and creating something. So it's not necessarily that these are bad things, that these are terrible things all the time. Sometimes there is a really, really bright silver lining to these diagnoses that can have really profound implications. So autism spectrum disorder affects a few people. We also have ADHD on that list, which affects more men than women. Once again, that could be the way that it's diagnosed, or it could also just be that that's how it happens, that more men than women have ADHD. You also saw that we have communication disorders, which communication disorders include like language disorders, they include speech sound disorders, child onset fluency disorders. They're really about, can you communicate with the world around you? Because if you can't communicate with the world around you, the world's a pretty hard place to get around. And beyond that, we also have motor disorders. Are your neural networks forming so that you can do things with your hands and your body like you're supposed to be able to? And intellectual disabilities. So sometimes your brain just doesn't form exactly the way that it's supposed to, and you get specific learning disorders, or you get something like an intellectual disability. The interesting thing about these disorders is, since they are about the forming of your neurology, they all come early. They all you can diagnose these between birth and 17 years old, but since they're about your neurology forming, they all happen right away. There aren't these disorders that show up when you're 42 or 43, like happens with some other mental illnesses where they have late onset. That said, we are going to jump into schizophrenia spectrum and other psychotic disorders. They affect about 0.4% of the U.S. population in any given year. Schizophrenia is normally considered like the most severe mental illness in studies where they measure people's reactions to the severity of mental illness. Normally, schizophrenia is at the top of the list. This is what people perceive as the most severe mental illness. The definition of schizophrenia is that schizophrenia is a mental disorder characterized by disruptions in thought processes, perceptions, emotional responsiveness, and social interactions. Although the course of schizophrenia varies among individuals, it's typically persistent and can be both severe and disabling. Symptoms include psychotic symptoms like hallucinations, delusions, thought disorder, and reduced expression of emotions. Now, they often start in late adolescence or early adulthood, but it can start earlier. This reflects, sometimes this happens as you have hard life events or something that will trigger the onset of what biology has dictated is going to happen, and then it manifests. If schizophrenia is left untreated, though, it is incredibly, incredibly damaging. Interesting to note about schizophrenia is there have been a number of things that have come out about schizophrenia, like the movie A Beautiful Mind, and there's been books written about schizophrenia. It's not, there's some problems sometimes when people confuse dissociative identity disorder and schizophrenia. Schizophrenia has hallucinations. It has all these things that happen in your head, but it does not have you switching from one personality to another. That's a different diagnosis altogether. Bipolar disorder and related disorders affect about 2.8% of the U.S. population in any given year. Now, that may seem a little bit low because there's a lifetime prevalence of 4.4%, and that's because bipolar disorder and these related disorders are called episodic disorders. You can have an episode of bipolar disorder where you can have a bipolar and a manic phase, and then you could not experience another episode for years. So there are a number of people who exist in a space where they have the disorder but are not symptomatic for long periods of time. As you can see, it sometimes refers to a manic depressive disorder. That was the name, especially 80s and before. It was often called manic depressive disorder. And it's characterized by dramatic shifts in mood, energy, and affects activity levels that affect a person's ability to carry out day-to-day tasks. In bipolar disorder, you have massive mood shifts from what we think of as really, really depressed, these incredibly low depressions, to manias, which are the flip side of that, and are these periods of hyperactivity and where it feels almost like you can do anything, like your brain is on fire because there's so much activity happening so fast. And then bipolar disorder, you actually move between those two poles, so bipolar, and sometimes spending little or no time in the middle between those two things. Data about comorbidity. Bipolar disorder is not diagnosed as mild to moderate very often. You can see this, that in the vast majority of cases, in 82.9% of cases, it's diagnosed as a severe mental illness, and only in a very small minority of cases, less than a quarter of cases, it's diagnosed as a moderate. That was according to 2019. So these are major, massive disorders. They have huge, huge implications for people, and often people with bipolar disorder end up on disability because they are not able to work because of the severity of their mental illness. Next, we're going to talk about depressive disorders. and depressive disorders, major depression's awful. There's levels of depressive disorders just like there are of autism or of bipolar disorder. But depressive illnesses can set in for incredibly long periods of time or short periods of time. But the minimum that you can diagnose a person with is at least 2 weeks where their depression affects them. And you can see that from the definition from the National Institute of Mental Health in 2019. I also have this video from Dr. Greg Knopf, who's a friend. Let's cut that section and redo it. I also have a video from Dr. Greg Knopf, who is a doctor in Portland, who's written a number of books about depression. He's a friend, and he has come up with this video about depression and what depression does in the brain. Thanks to Dr. Greg Knopf for that. That was just a beautiful piece. And it shows us exactly how our own neurotransmitters affect depression and what happens in that. Now, depression affects a lot of people. Overall, it affects a little bit less than 8% of the population. Once again, numbers are skewed for females to males, 9.6% of females versus 6% of males. And you can see the same skew that we saw in mental illnesses and severe mental illnesses, where the skew is toward younger people, age 18 to 25 having by far the highest rates of depression at 15.2, and then dwindling down to less than 5% after age 50. You can also see that whites continue to have some of the higher rates, but you can see in the case that there are two or more races, or in the case of American Indians or Native Americans, these rates are actually much higher, with two or more races being the highest at 13.7% in the last year. It is important to note that in depression, since there are so many different types of depression and severities, that depression could mean that someone goes through an episode and they're fine, or depression could be that someone has clinical depression where it is absolutely disabling and cannot be overcome without medications. And that just depends on the person, and it depends on how their body works. So once again, since it's a spectrum disorder, it can be anywhere on that spectrum. Next comes anxiety disorders. Anxiety disorders are the most prevalent mental illness that there is. Here's your definition. Occasional anxiety is an expected part of life, but anxiety disorders involve more than temporary worry or fear. For a person with an anxiety disorder, the anxiety does not go away and get worse over time. The symptoms can interfere with daily activities such as job performance, schoolwork, and relationships. There are several different types, including generalized anxiety disorder, panic disorder, and various phobia-related disorders. You can see the commonality of these disorders. Overall, it's about 19.1% of people will experience anxiety in a given year, and that is an anxiety disorder, not just any level of anxiety. These rates, again, are skewed higher female to male, and once again, they're a little bit higher in younger ages, but you can see in 60-plus that just drops off significantly. But before then, it's quite a bit higher. It's also important to note that during COVID, with the increase in anxiety and depressive disorders, there was an increase of like a full 5 percentage points in those with unmet mental health care needs and other increases. And there was were largely those who were 18 to 29 years old and without an education. So anxiety is bad. In the last couple of years, it's gotten in some ways worse. So just an important thing to know. Also important to know is panic disorders, phobias, these all fit under anxiety disorders. So things like fears of open spaces, arachnophobia, you name it, all of those things are also phobia disorders or anxiety disorders, as are panic disorders and panic attacks. Those are brought on and also a type of anxiety disorder. Obsessive compulsive and related disorders, OCD, is a common chronic long-lasting disorder in which a person has uncontrollable recurring thoughts, obsessions, and or behaviors which he or she feels the urge to repeat over and over again. It's not very common. It affects about 1.2% of the population, and the rates, once again, are skewed much higher female to male, and once again, higher in younger age groups. These are incredibly damaging disorders often, though. We think of, you know, the show Monk and about how he was incredibly detail-oriented about his cleaning and about his sanitation of things. I have a number of friends with obsessive-compulsive disorder, and the way those manifest can be crippling in how they have to go about their days and how the intrusive thoughts, they don't go away and they just butt in and in some ways dominate a person's conscious life. It's a very difficult and very strange sort of situation. Next are trauma and stressor-related disorders like PTSD. Now these are not necessarily considered just like mental illnesses. These are actually injuries in the way they happen. They actually damage your brain. Not that your brain gets hit by a hammer or something, but the way your brain works is rewired by traumatic events. So these are almost like if your brain got injured. It can develop after exposure to potentially traumatic events and that are beyond typical stressors. Events that may lead to PTSD include, but are not limited to, violent personal assaults, natural or human-caused disasters, accidents, combats, or other forms of violence. Exposure to events like these are common. About one half of all U.S. adults will experience a traumatic event in their life that would be significant enough that it could cause PTSD, but most do not develop PTSD. People who experience PTSD may have persistent frightening thoughts and memories, experience sleep problems, feel detached or numb, they can be easily started, and they can significantly impair a person's ability to function at work, at home, or socially. We see this especially commonly with people who have been through issues of violence, whether that was sexual violence or whether that was battlefield violence. It changes how our brain functions. It breaks us, and then that breaking has to be worked with in very specific and very detailed ways in order to work past. There's even specific modalities of therapy to work through trauma, and I'm really glad that we've developed some really great ways of working, and we'll talk more about those as they come up later in the course. The mental health rates of PTSD are around 3.5%. They get highest among people in 45 to 59 age group, which is interesting. But it could be that there has been more chance to live life. There have been more opportunities for traumatic events to set in and more opportunities for people to have bad things happen, which is unfortunately part of what happens. And according to the Criterion A definition, we're talking about the definition of when trauma happens and how many people are affected by trauma. Most people are trauma exposed. 87.7% of participants were trauma exposed in this study. Of those, 12.5% or 12.7% met diagnostic requirements for PTSD. So when you get trauma, it doesn't necessarily mean PTSD happens, right? This was a study of complex trauma, and in that, you can say 87% of people were exposed, but only 12.5% made it. That's a significantly lower number. It's about 1 in 5 people actually developed PTSD, even with there was trauma. Dissociative disorders are what many people think of as schizophrenia, but it's actually not. This is where you have your brain break into sometimes multiple personalities. This used to be called multiple personality disorder. Some people talk about it as different parts of you, but it's not very common. It's about 1.5% of the global population. It's often misdiagnosed. It's often in people who had really traumatic upbringings, and it's often associated with self-injury and suicide attempts. Somatic symptoms disorder is among those, which is characterized by an extreme focus on physical symptoms such as pain or fatigue that causes a major emotional distress and problems functioning. So sometimes you have a problem, somatic, your body. So you have a symptom in your body that feels really terrible, and that affects 5 to 7% of the population. Among mental health issues, you also have feeding and eating disorders, which these are all about, you know, little babies and when they're having problems eating and growing. But then you get to eating disorders such as anorexia and bulimia. Women suffer from them much more often than men do. But interesting to note, they are among some of the most deadly mental illnesses that exist, are actually eating disorders. Elimination disorders are only, you know, basically for kids. It's when we have problems going through, going to the restroom in the right ways at the right places. There's also sexual dysfunctions like gender dysphoria. Especially now with questions about transgender and what race you were or what sex you were meant to be at birth. There's questions about how you walk through if a person feels like they were made wrong. And you can teach an entire class just on gender dysphoria and how people process that. In many cases, many churches are having to wrestle through these issues really hard right now. To be blunt, most of this course is going to be focused on the mental illnesses that you see in your church that are things like depression or bipolar or schizophrenia or anxiety, issues about the theology of what it means to be made male or female and what it means to be made at birth are huge issues that are much, much too big for us to cover in this course well. Sleep-wake disorders affect a number of people, about 6 to 10% of people have insomnia. You also get restless leg, narcolepsy, all sorts of things. These are just problems sleeping or staying asleep. And then we also get disruptive impulse control and conduct disorders. And there's tons of different ways that these exhibit themselves. They're all about, you know, destroying property, defiance, stealing, rule breaking, but there's more than that. There's a piece of that that isn't normal. You know, fire is really handy and good and fun, but not every person who enjoys fire because it's really a great tool in life is a pyromaniac. And likewise, you know, it's great to have good things, but not every person is a kleptomaniac and steals things. So that is to say that they are about impulse control. And they're fairly big issues. But once again, when you're talking about mental illnesses, these are generally considered almost like moral issues instead of mental issues. They're somehow taken off of the mental illness space when we talk about mental illnesses often. And instead, people generally tend to focus on depression, bipolar, anxiety, schizophrenia, and those sorts of things. So we're not going to touch on these really heavily at all in this course, but they're there, and you will at some point need to work or deal with them, most likely. What you will have to deal with on a really regular basis, though, is substance-related and addictive disorders. And that's because the comorbidity between substance-related and addictive behaviors and things like bipolar disorder, depression, or anxiety is amazingly high. So many people cope with things like bipolar disorder with substances and with addictions. It's terrifying, but it's part of what is going on. The lifetime rate for alcohol use disorder in teens is 8%. Illicit drug rates is 2-3%. But that how they affect people is just so much higher than that. The rates of alcoholism and the number of people who are affected by alcoholism are going, they're just incredibly high, especially since COVID. They've been going up since COVID. The rates of opioid use and the opioid crisis going on is just going through the roof, especially since COVID began in 2020. So we're seeing much higher rates of some of these things, in part because they're coping mechanisms. Addictions exist because someone needs to cope with something, and addictions are a really bad solution to an existing problem. In this case, I can't deal with my life and I need an outlet or something like that. And because of that, the addiction becomes the outlet to that problem and then feeds on itself until it becomes its own kind of problem. Neurocognitive disorders refer to disorders with cognitive decline. So we talk about neurodegenerative disorders. These are forming those neurons. Neurocognitive disorders are on the latter end of life. Specifically, we're talking about Alzheimer's and dementia mostly, but those are becoming epidemic. The number is growing incredibly quickly. 6.2 million Americans age 65 or older today. But they're expecting the number to grow to 13.8 million by 2060. And I've heard guesses that it could even grow much more than that with relations to different medical conditions that are showing to be more common in people who are younger. It's also important to know that Alzheimer's dementia putting an incredibly heavy burden on family members. The number of unpaid hours that family members spend caring for loved ones is astronomical because you basically are their primary caregiver and you have to take care of them all the time. 15.3 billion hours of care to people with Alzheimer's and dementia in 2020. That's a phenomenal amount of work that was put in caring for people. Finally, we get to personality disorders, and they fit into one of three clusters, as you can see, A, B, and C, and those fit as far as different characteristics of these disorders. Cluster A, paranoid personality disorder, schizoid personality disorder, and schizotypal personality disorder. Section B, antisocial personality, borderline, histrionic personality disorder, and narcissistic personality disorder. And section C, antisocial or dependent personality disorder, obsessive compulsive personality disorder. What you need to know about these used to be considered Axis II disorders. In the DSM-IV, there was Axis 1 and 2, and or DSM-3. Anyway, but now these are just lumped in. Personality disorders are their own thing in the DSM-5. There's no considered axis as far as these are trauma-caused or these are biologically caused. But personality disorders are a massive issue in churches, especially borderline personality disorder. We used to talk about borderline as the pastor killer when I was working with Mike Way at Cave full-time. Which was, it would just suck people dry, especially pastors, because there was this almost leech-like ability for people to feed off of you because they were so desperately looking for love and care and attention. So understanding what borderline is and how it works is incredibly important for you as a pastor. the number of pastors who I've known who have worked with borderline and just been absolutely destroyed because of it is really high. And for that, specifically for pastors, there's books like Walking on Eggshells about borderline personality disorder and what you can do if you know somebody with borderline personality disorder that just are incredibly important. I cannot overemphasize how important it is to get some knowledge about that. The reason, the way borderline specifically works is I need to get my worth and value from you because there's such a distrust or hatred of myself. And that feeds on itself. And so I am naturally going to latch on to somebody who can help me get some belief that I belong or that I matter. But that core belief that I still do not matter is still underneath. It's still building. It still has legs, for lack of a better word. And so as I suck all of that meaning and purpose out of you that you give to my life, I still hate myself inside. So at some point, this relationship needs to go sideways if there's any doubt about me being able to continue to feed. And that reinforces the idea that I am worthless, that I am nothing. And so we see a lot of the time that there's this pull. I will pull everything out of you until a boundary comes. And then there is just an absolute destruction of the relationship because the only way the relationship could exist was with this flow. And the reason I'm pushing on this extra is because we have seen so many pastors adversely affected by it. These are the rates of personality disorders and borderline. As you can see, personality disorders are about 9.1% of the population. Borderline makes up about 1.4% of the population. But if you're going to find borderline, we used to joke that people with borderline find each other, and it's just something that happens. So a final note about personality disorders is most of us have some of the characteristics of personality disorders in us, right? We naturally are a little bit narcissistic, especially when we're 3 years old. That does not mean you have narcissistic personality disorder. We're naturally have self-doubts and problems with believing in ourselves. We naturally have issues with relating to other people at times and wanting to pull back or pull away. But those do not mean you have a disorder. These disorders are when these things affect daily life in profound ways. So it's not something that's really, really common. It's about 9% of the population. But in many cases, it's very severe. There's also paraphilic disorders. We're not going to touch on those very much. Those are about sexual desire and I have never come across paraphilic desires as something that I was working with on a regular basis, working with mental health issues. So we're just not going to jump into those too much. Other than that, there are also many other mental disorders and additional codes that are smaller. There's different types of depression, different types of bipolar disorder. There's different things that affect people. There's different types of anxiety disorders. We couldn't possibly touch on every single thing that could possibly exist because they're coming up with new ones all the time because we're still seeing new things that we don't have names for. There's also medication-induced movement disorders. There's other effects of medication. There are now even treating people. We're getting more problems because these medications that we're using are very strong, and sometimes they have side effects. And so we're finding that there's even different disorders or different problems just because of medications. So because of that, there's other conditions that may be a focus of clinical attention, even if there's other mental illnesses going on. So that is mental illness in, well, as fast as we could possibly run through it. These are the definitions, but in the next week, we're going to be touching on more what they feel like, what it feels like to go through them, how it affects the people around you, how it changes your self-image, how it changes you as a person inside. And I think that gives you a deeper perspective. These very, very clinical looks at things can feel pretty heartless and pretty shallow. And in some ways, that's because it is. When you read things like bipolar disorder can cause high or low moods, that doesn't capture what someone with bipolar disorder is going through. Or when you read that schizophrenia may cause hallucinations, you might think, oh, well, they just see something. And that doesn't convey the depth and the changes that happen inside your concept of who you are and your concept of how the world works because of what happens. Likewise, when we talk about, you know, anxiety, it doesn't capture the panic that panic disorders are. It doesn't capture how incredibly terrifying it is to be so out of control. And we're going to touch on that a little bit more next time with a few stories and a few pieces. In the next section of this week, we're going to be talking about suicide. And then next week, we will start hitting on all of those other topics. Thank you so much for spending this time with me, and I look forward to seeing you in the next section.